I'm Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to The Fashion Hags.
We love to love.
And love to hate.
All things fashion. 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 Hey. Hey, hey. 79. Hey, ho, ho, ho. It's us. We're back. We're doing stuff.
I just realized the other day that we don't say, I'm Katie and I'm Evan and I'm Abby. Do people get confused?
Do that?
We need to do that.
It's in our pre-recorded.
It is in our little intro.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
And our voices sound different enough that I don't know if it's an issue.
And I guess when I'm like, where we're like, what are you obsessed with, Abby?
Yeah.
That's the leading question.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't need to worry about that, right?
I think we're okay.
Guys, let us know if we're doing this wrong.
That's
and
confusing.
Maybe we'll listen to you or not.
What podcast was it? Fuck, there was one.
Oh, yeah, this is the Fashion Hags podcast.
Yes, Fashion Hags.
There was one. Oh, fuck. Didn't know what button you pushed when you started.
What was it called?
Listening.
It was Neil Brennan and Moshe Kasher, who are two stand-ups. Forgot the name of their podcast. They don't have it anymore. And it was just them shooting the shit and sometimes interviewing like hip-hop people because they're both super into hip-hop. But their voices sound exactly the same.
Neil Brennan and Moshe Kasher?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how you
like,
do that.
Freaky. Yes. I don't think we have that. I don't think that's an issue for us.
No. Probably not.
So that's good. We can just keep talking our shit. And at the end of the day, we have a lot of the same opinions. So who cares?
That's true.
Who cares whose mouth it came out of?
That's true.
We all stand by each other and our opinions. Unless we need to have a little
calling in.
Yeah.
Rather.
Yeah.
Not a calling out.
No, but that's fine. And then I'm sure the person called out or called in would hopefully be graceful about it.
At least while we're recording.
Yes.
There's been so many flipped tables.
Yeah,
you guys,
we're going to flip the fuck out as soon as you stop recording.
Drinks thrown in faces.
Yeah.
There's been near violence.
Yeah.
No
one has opinions on things.
You guys, we're back. Sorry about the delay. I was sick. I'm still fucking sick. I've been sick for 1,000 years.
Time of year.
It feels like.
And it's getting worse every year.
It's getting worse every year. That's true. It is.
It's almost like nature wants to rebalance the scales a little bit.
Yeah. Kill off all the anti-vaxxers.
That problem solves itself.
Oh.
What a disaster.
Oh, boy.
I am vaccinated, so that's
we're
not
all
my
good.
Problem.
Mm-hmm. Everyone in this house, including the dog, is vaccinated, so we're good in our house.
Not my problem, but
oh,
God
geez.
Damn it, this cold has just been wringing me dry.
Kicking your butt.
Don't care for it. One bit.
No.
I'm
well, here's hoping spring's coming.
I know.
It's supposed to be like 16 degrees next week.
I know. I bought a new parka. And I have been
just
able to use
for
it for,
yeah.
I know. I was like, every time the sun comes out, I was like, no. I mean, it's cold. That'd be great because I still wouldn't be able to use this parka for like
I guess
couple more days.
I guess I'll wear a tank top underneath it. just a bra.
I really like this.
That's a look.
It's like a long, it's like a knee length, like just below the knee.
Yeah, that's the way
like,
to do
how
it.
How on earth did I live in Alberta for like 25 years without a full length down coat.
Yeah.
I don't
Once
know.
I started buying coats that are knee length, I can't go back.
Well, they also didn't exist. We didn't.
True.
I could never find. I mean, we never.
Yeah.
They never. Unless it was like a big wool, like
it was a huge weird thing,
heavy, like, super heavy.
All the
get wet.
Patagonia wasn't making them, or
no.
North Face wasn't making them.
No.
Or, there was no Canada Goose back then.
Excuse me. And I couldn't afford one
for
anyway.
A coat. Anyway, so we're getting over.
Anyway,
it.
We're back. Thank you for your patience. Sorry, we're late. Blah, blah, blah. Here we are.
Thanks for listening.
What's going on? So much has happened since we recorded
so
last.
So much has happened.
Mm. Evan, you were in San Fran.
I was. I went to San Francisco for a little vacation.
America, California.
America, my first time in California. It was interesting. I had never been anywhere in the States except for New York for a day and then Seattle for like total 3 days. So spending a week in the States
in
was
it.
Interesting.
Right.
I was lucky enough to stay in the Mission District, which is where the Spanish colonizers landed and started all of the Catholic missions. So there's a huge indigenous population or an indigenous presence in that neighborhood in San Francisco. So it was really interesting to be amongst like a different kind of energy with indigenous people who can. It's interesting because with this border that divides us, by and large, like most people I've met from the States who are indigenous identify as an American
first.
You know, like an American identity is not separate from their being. I don't think it's the same in Canada. It's interesting. I grew up in Canada.
It's the melting pot mosaic thing too, right? Yeah. Where you go to America, you become American. And then when you come to Canada, you bring everything you have with you.
Yeah,
in theory. Then there's also Canadians stuff that comes
in. Unless you're native. You can't bring everything with you.
No, right. I mean, it was already here.
No. Yeah. We just take it.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly.
We just take it.
I mean, the multicultural project of Canada is a smokescreen for how Canada became a country. That's kind of basically all it does. And gives Canada a good moral footing
redirects.
Around the world.
Yeah, it redirects
the attention, you know?
Yeah.
But it was really interesting. Growing up here in Canada, obviously I know I was Canadian and there's not this idea, this pervasive idea of the Canadian identity, you know, even within Canada, by and large, the Canadian identity is kind of
it's undefined.
It's intangible. You know, you don't instantly think of things. When you think American, you think it's like a brand.
Yes.
You know, it's like a global brand. Yeah. And it's not kind of the same thing in Canada for a different reason, I guess. And it was beautiful and... I tried my best to educate myself on the history of San Francisco because I was there and I was enjoying the beauty and enjoying the culture and looking out at going on hikes and being in nature and looking out onto the Golden Gate Bridge and all of these beautiful coastal passageways.
Yeah.
It's just I always try and think now what existed here before this existed and who was here before all this existed.
It was here 1,000 years ago.
Exactly. Then it's trying to strip away all the buildings and just put up trees or whatever it's supposed to look like. And yeah, it was, I think because a city like San Francisco is similar to Vancouver in the context of like nature and city kind of intertwine. It's not the same as New York where it's a concrete jungle or the same as Seattle where it's a concrete jungle even more so.
Yeah. And, it's weird.
And yeah, it's, I don't know.
And it's been there a long time, too. Like, it's an old city as far as North American cities go. It's been there a long time.
Since the 1700s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And looking into the history of how San Francisco became a city and how California joined the Union and then what was done after that and, seeing how swiftly that project, unfolded and how...
that moved around.
It's just how many people... this is all estimations, obviously, but it's estimated that 500,000 people died within 25 years.
Jesus Christ.
From disease, famine, and war.
And other violence and other things, sure. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Ah, colonization, the constant moving forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The ever-changing weak beast.
Did you go to any drag shows?
Did not go to any drag shows.
Oh, no.
But I did get to go and see my friend Quinn's play. I was there visiting my friend Quinn. Thank you for the hospitality. Quinn listens to the podcast.
Hi, Quinn.
And they were in this amazing show.
Quinn, you're great. We love you.
They were in this amazing show called I Too Sing America. And then it was great to be there and be educating myself and all this stuff and also having a great time and going to the Castro and doing the gay shit and all this stuff and paying those respects as well to those people.
Again, one of the oldest, gay districts
the stronghold,
in the country.
Yeah. A lot of movements started out of the Castro district, whether or not they were inclusive of my people
or successful or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I still think that the reverence needs to be given.
Sure. Of course.
We went down to this great show and it was based off of Langston Hughes' poem called I Too Am America. And it was called I Too Sing America. And it was this merger of monologue and spoken word and song and dance. And it was so beautiful. It was about the experience of the American diaspora or the different parts of American identity. And in this production, people of color were put to the forefront, and then there was I'd say 98% of the cast was POC, and then within that there were a few white folk, but the white people didn't, they were part of the harmonies, they were part of the band, but they never really like had a monologue or had a solo in a song. They were kind of just like there as like a support. And I think that was really interesting to see as well, and not have white that performers foregrounded. And yeah, and it was just so great. There were so many like nods to contemporary and historical figures like Langston Hughes, and then to Beyonce and to Nina Simone and all of these amazing artists, and like, and what they had to say with their art, and like bringing it, of course, back into the today's context, and like, of what it means to be a person of color in America. And it was really beautiful. I saw it twice.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was like awesome. So good the first time. That's awesome. Like go back and watch it because I wanted to hear everything again. Yeah, and then I also moved into a new place when I got back. So I got back.
Oh my God, that's right.
I got back.
Yeah,
I had
like
a performance.
2 days later or something. Yeah.
I got back. I had a performance. For the first time in 15 years, I got a dancing injury. I broke my toe.
Oh, no.
And then I had to pack my place in 4 days, moved. Thank God I was like all like planned to have movers and like all this stuff.
Yeah, good for you.
And threw money at that problem, which is nice to be able to do.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm like all in my own space.
Your own digs.
My
Hooray.
Own digs.
Yeah.
I have a fob to get into my building the first time
Fancy.
Ever. I feel very, very she.
Ooh, la, la.
Yeah.
Bougie.
Very bougie. Yeah. And like, it's like a brick building. It feels very that. I'm that girl.
Yeah.
I'm that girl who lives in the
Just
Fraser View,
the
Mount
air.
Pleasant. Throw my beret
air.
In the air. Yeah. I'm an entrepreneur, small business owner.
Yeah.
One bedroom apartment renter in Vancouver,
sure.
reluctantly.
Sewing in your underwear.
Sewing in my underwear. Embroidering in my underwear. Cooking in my underwear.
Great having no roommate.
It's
roommates.
Great. It's wonderful.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's so exciting. Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Big steps.
You,
big
friend.
Steps.
Good times.
Yeah. Now it's just to to again, like resituate yourself in a space and like create your.
Sure, your traditions.
Your traditions
and
like, you have to like find your bodega. You have to find like your takeout place, like your go-tos.
Yes.
You gotta figure out which
new weed
cupboard,
store.
Yeah, which cupboard
yes,
to put
which
the pots
good,
in.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's
yeah.
like, and then
which bus
I'm,
stop is the better bus
yes.
stop to stop yeah. at? Because that's a big difference.
Very important. Yeah, very important.
Well, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finding new homes for things in your house.
Exactly. It's like the first time cooking, you're like, nope, that is not good.
That is not where that's
going to
go.
This all need, that needs to be there.
When we moved, I think we moved things in the cupboards for at least 2 months. Be like, I know you put this here, but I think it should go over here. Let's try it over here. Then move it back over there. You'll settle then.
The thing is like, I have no kitchen shit, obviously, because everyone who listens to the
oven.
Podcast yeah. knows I'm not much of a cook. All of my domestic talents lie in sewing. If that's still counted as a domestic, I don't know, trait.
Some people probably is.
Unfortunately.
Man, probably.
Cishet white men. The root of all evil.
Nothing but trouble.
Thank you for producing and editing our podcast.
Hi.
Thanks, Dave.
He knows he's good.
Not all cishet white men. No. I can't believe I just said that. Oh my God. I'm going to, and to remember the call out, call in. I'm going to get called out
there
from
you
the
go.
Can for that one.
Yeah, there
out.
You go. He's cool.
But they know
but
I say
still.
It in jest.
Yes, it's fine.
Yeah. If you can't joke about it, then.
Where are we?
Yeah.
Then
we're
what
just
are you doing? Listen to this podcast.
Descend into sadness. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also have a couple of very exciting events I'm going to talk to you about later in our.
Obsesh?
Our obseshes.
Cool.
Yeah. How about you, Abby?
Nice. Yeah, it's been a while since we recorded, but I haven't been up to much. I was telling these two upstairs, I will spare everyone the details, but my dog is getting older. He's going to be 15 in a couple months.
Buddy.
His body's falling apart. No major issues, and it's totally fine, but there's been a few trips to he would go to the vet once a year for his shots and his checkup, and that was it. Unless there was some weird injury or something, he cut his foot or something. But his whole life he's been so healthy, and then now it's just like, oh, yep, that doesn't look right. That's not working properly. Oh, I should get that looked at. So there's been a lot of that. So he's great. He's fine. But it's a real reality check, which fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to mentally prepare myself for what that's going to look like in the next little bit. But he seemed, like I said, he's fine. you know, pretty slowing down. Things aren't working as they used to. And, you know, he sleeps all the time and he's deaf and he's got one eye and back legs don't work so well anymore. And
he's just a pirate. He's a pirate. Just a pirate.
But he's, the vet always asks, is he eating? Yes. Is he sleeping? Yes. Is he pooping? Yes. Well, then he's fine.
Yeah.
It's like really the benchmark.
Yeah.
Does he seem uncomfortable? No. Is he on daily painkillers? Yes. Which help. But yeah, just watching, you know, not to be a bummer, but like one of the great loves of my life die in front of me every day a little bit. So that's fun. You can't laugh about that.
Yeah. Aw, poor little dude. But, so, you know, he's not there yet.
I forget. I think maybe I've said this before. I think it's George Carlin says, when you buy a pet, you were purchasing a small tragedy.
Oh.
Because you're guaranteed. Yeah.
That's poetry.
Yeah.
You're guaranteed this was going to end badly. Yeah. Because the dog will not outlive you and you will see it die.
Get a bird next time. They live to be like a tortoise or something.
Yeah. Let's do it for it. Poppy loves turtles. It'll be fine. It's totally fine. It'll just live on the main floor of the house. Doesn't even go up the stairs.
That's fine.
Slow open maintenance. Open the patio door.
It'll be fine.
You can never get too far.
Paint his toenails. It's fine.
You can make tiny, tiny hats for his birthday.
Amazing. Yeah. I already make them for the dog as well.
Tinier hats.
Yes. Anyway, so that's me. Nothing very exciting. Just, you know, mortality staring you in the face.
Yeah.
And Katie's recovering. You've been...
I'm recovering. I'm chipping away at this fucking
these
cold.
Germs inside your body. Yeah.
But every day is like, I'm feeling better than I did yesterday, so that's good.
There you go. Even if it's just that like 10%, still counts.
Yeah. Like you said upstairs, like, oh, have you gone to the doctor? Like, well, no, because they're going to say, well, it's a bad cold.
Sick. You're sick.
Just get some rest. Take some drugs and get some rest.
I know two people who had an ear infection for like a month and they thought it was a cold. So maybe
brutal.
You should
go.
If by like Friday,
you're not like,
I'm not
in
like,
fighting shape.
I'm fighting shape. Then I will go and make sure this isn't a thing that's worse.
Well, I saw a thing. It's like, how do you... It was in like someone's... I think it was another mom friend of mine who just shared it because she saw it in her pediatrician's office, was talking about how like, if you have a fever for more than 3 days, see a doctor. If you have a cold for more than 10 days, see a doctor. You know, like and then if your cough can last 25 days to whatever. And you're like, great.
Yeah.
Because they're all things that don't have... cures or things that can make you get over it quicker and like all these things. It's like, you just gotta
because I was sick and then I got better and then I thought I was out of the weeds and then I did, you know, a couple of yoga classes and I did like a really intense workout, like one of the most intense workouts I've done in years probably.
Sure.
And a couple days after that I just fell right off again. So I think I bit off more than I could chew with that.
Your body's just a little... open to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that is what happened.
And everywhere is a cesspool of germs.
I know.
That
I know.
Too.
I just started a new job. So with all of these other people.
Sure. It's a new environment. Yeah.
When I started, they're like, it's basically like a daycare. So
you're going to catch some stuff. Just wash your hands. And
800 times
make sure
a day.
The NyQuil is ready to go when you get home at night. Whatever.
But other than that,
good.
Yesterday we got tickets last minute. Chris and I got tickets to the Rugby Sevens.
How was that?
It was so fun.
It looked so fun.
It was really fun. We didn't dress up because we didn't prepare and have enough time or whatever.
For those who don't know, Rugby Sevens is a big rugby tournament. And everybody dresses, all the audience dresses up in like Halloween costumes, like full on costumes.
Full on costumes.
And you I don't know why. You'll all dress as army guys, or you're all dressed as brides, or you're all whatever.
There was a lot of pregnant nuns.
There's a lot of drinking.
There's a lot of drinking
because it's rugby people, so it's all like
party.
It's all Commonwealth, British results, whatever British gene pool. So there's a lot of drinking happening.
There was a lot of drinking. We did not participate that heavily, but we sat in a. The group of people that we got the tickets with, it was my in-laws, basically. They got the tickets and they went on the Saturday and we went on the Sunday.
Sweet.
But it was with a whole bunch of Albert Einsteins. So we were to see of Albert
there you
Einstein.
Go, we're the Brainiacs.
Which
nice.
Was kind of fun.
Oh, awesome.
And there was a really like beautifully coordinated group of super troopers right across the stadium with like very polished,
put together. Yeah,
very put together, very nice. Serious. There were lots of like Canadian lumberjacks. It's a Canadian event. So there was lots of, you know, the buffalo plaid.
I saw somebody post a big thing. It was maybe new. Somebody posted a thing about a bunch of people dressed as lumberjacks. I saw it with beards and red plaid shirts and fake axes and everything. I forget who it was.
I don't know. There's a lot of that though. There was, pregnant nuns. There was
a bunch of really good hot dogs. It's like a tournament that happens over a weekend, and many games are played in one day.
Right? Yeah, so the way it works is there's seven minute games or something, or seven-minute halves,
and there's seven guys on the team.
There's seven guys per half. I'm sorry, seven players per team, 7 minutes per half, and so the games are only 14 minutes of play, plus whatever extra time it is to like finish the, basically finish that play. They don't cut the play in the middle of a, or they don't cut the game in the middle of a play.
But it sounds like a fun,
so
like
it's really fun. It's a really fun sport to watch.
It's really speedy and you got to pay attention. That's why I like hockey so much. It's because it's fast and things happen.
And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure it out.
Figure it out, yeah.
Rugby, it's really simple. The ball cannot move forward. It cannot be passed forward.
Sure, so you got to make sure the guy is slightly behind
you. So watching it is quite dynamic. Like it's really cool to see them move forward across the field because they're passing the ball sideways and all running kind of like on a diagonal and you got to be right in the right place and you can't get too far ahead because then your guy can't pass to you because he can't pass it forward. And the tackling is like, I mean, it's a full contact sport, but it's not like football where there's 400 guys on this, on each, just like on the field, just smashing into each other for 10 seconds and then the play stops for 20 minutes.
And then the medics come out and they, you know, check them for brain injuries and then move on.
And they shout out plays from a rule book that's 200 pages long. It's like, no, you're just going on your playing.
Yeah, just
like,
throw the ball around and score.
Yeah. Anyone can
or
play.
Or stop someone from scoring.
Totally. It's a really cool game. It was a very enjoyable.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was really fun. I would highly recommend it. If you haven't gone to see it, go. And it was great. It was cool to see it hosted here. Like it was a thing when I was in New Zealand years ago. And so I had heard about it from literally almost 20 years ago.
Canada's been up there and we're one of the main teams.
Yeah, and they actually did quite well.
The women's team is really well too.
Yeah, I'd love to see a women's sevens get some traction. That would be cool. But all these guys, like the New Zealand All Blacks team are fucking beautiful, every single one of them.
I was just gonna say.
All of them are good looking men. And they have these real short shorts, which is really nice.
I ain't angry at that.
They have a little short and little necks mostly because it's all traps.
Yeah. You got a top heavy.
You're a bit top heavy, but they're all beautiful. You're fucking fast. You got so much power. And they lift these guys up to like catch the ball and just throw in.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa was there. He's shooting.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So he got some time on the big screen.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was good. It was really fun. I would do again. I don't know how much money I would spend for the tickets, but I didn't pay for tickets, so I would go again. Issue. Yep.
That worked out.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. It was nice to do something different, for sure. It was good. Anyway.
Oh, yes. So rugby is not on brand for us. Let's move on.
Not at all. No. No, not at all.
But what is on brand is loving and bitching at the same time, which is what we're here to do today. We're a little bit behind because we had to have a little bit of a delay, but we're going to talk about Karl Lagerfeld today. We figured he deserved his own episode, especially now that he's no longer with us.
If you haven't heard, Karl Lagerfeld is dead. And if you didn't know that and you listen to this podcast,
maybe look into some stuff.
Maybe do a quick Google search.
Quick Google.
Just business of fashion. Just give that a skim.
Yeah. Just subscribe to that daily email. It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've talked about him many, many times. We've all known of him, three of us, for our whole lives, essentially.
Very, very, very long time. Long before he started actively branding himself.
Being Karl Lagerfeld.
But there it is.
But yeah, so he died a couple weeks ago, and people figured something was up because at the couture show, he wasn't there. And he wasn't there to take his final bow. And that was like the first time ever.
Yeah.
And that was in January. And they realized that, weird. He's old as fuck and he didn't show up.
He was quote unquote 85.
Yeah, who knows what that means.
But he was notorious for lying about what year he was born. So
somewhere in the 1930s, I've heard.
They're not sure.
I've heard 1939 and I've heard 1931 and I've heard a few in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who knows what that means?
And then he was always super cagey with his answers too. Like somebody would straight up ask him, I've seen two different ages for you. And he's like, what do you think? Yeah. Or whatever. Like he'd have some like deflective answer.
Or he'd go off on a diatribe about how age doesn't matter and being ageless and all this stuff and bringing back to the Chanel woman. And
yeah, he's from another planet and yada, 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 yada. So there's been a lot of talk about him. And it seems pretty clearly delineated for me that all the people who are in the fashion industry are praising him. And all the people who are not in the fashion industry are talking about what a piece of garbage he was. And you know what? It's both.
He was both.
It's a bit of both. And I forget who I was talking to. Somebody recently. And I was trying to think of in another industry, because I know if people... We're trying to break through with this particular podcast about how like weirdly niche and esoteric and stuff that the fashion industry can be. And it's very closed off and
very insular.
Yes, tons, and if you don't know, then we're not going to tell you. And you're not going to ask because we're not going to tell you. But I was trying
price
to think.
Price upon request.
Yes. And if there's no price, then you can't afford it.
Yeah.
But trying to figure out in another industry, someone comparable. To like draw an analogy of like he was the blank of the fashion industry, trying to find like a movie person or like trying to, and there's no one that I could think of that would fulfill the same longevity, output, charisma, like
Mick Jagger.
Maybe.
I but couldn't some, think of someone but, closer.
But someone, people would argue that Mick Jagger hasn't done shit for 20 years.
Maybe like,
whereas Karl
like
Lagerfeld
like a Martin
has
Scorsese?
Done bock load of stuff.
No.
But or then, Spielberg kind of thing.
But then Scorsese, the level of output. They make one movie every four or five years.
Yeah, and he does that much work.
And also they are way less controversial.
Yes.
Exactly.
I was trying to think like the influence.
As far as we know, they're not raging misogynists like Carl was.
Like Karl Lagerfeld.
Yeah.
Amongst other isms that
or
he was.
Or fatphobic and all kinds of things.
Sure. Oh boy.
Yeah.
But trying to figure out somebody who had a career that long, who consistently worked that long, who was influential, who changed the industry, you know, like people have done two or three out of these things, but to do all of the things that he did, I don't know of anybody else.
Maybe there's someone in like
tech,
you
or
know,
something.
Tech or some
know,
like
just, I'm
niche,
not aware of
politics,
like car culture.
Yeah,
or does it need to be artistic?
You know, an architect or something who, you know,
work. But I think
like
it needs to be an
Gary
industry that works
but,
at a breakneck pace. You know, like as you said, movies take a long fucking time to make.
You make one movie and you work 5 years on that one project,
and then. It needs to be the pace and it needs to be the expectation more so, because in fashion, there's the expectation that you need to always be putting out something new to be seen as relevant.
And that was Carl's whole thing.
Exactly.
Never look back.
Completely fed into
never
that.
Never look back. Only look forward.
Maybe someone like, well, not with the work with output necessarily, but like someone like Gary Shandling, maybe, but he didn't have the same output.
Maybe like
the same volume of work, I don't think. Like you say, like,
and Gary Shandling, like if you talk about just the comedy world, perhaps, but the larger entertainment world, like Carl did, the larger fashion
world. Yeah, you're
world,
right. Yeah.
See, he's
and
like,
had his hand in
he's
every
a monolith.
Pot.
Yeah. He is an icon. People throw these words around, but this is actually him. He started working in like the 50s, straight out of high school for Pierre Balmain, which is one of the pillars of fashion. You know, back then, him and YSL were rivals for years and years and years and years and years on many levels, on personal and professional and many levels. And like he just, as this is the only thing he's ever done, and he had consistently done it at the highest possible level for 50 years.
Yep.
Like he's been designed. He got to Chanel in the 80s, I think, but he was already at Fendi in the 70s. So he'd already been designing for Fendi for all those years. And before that, working for other people in other houses, and then he got his own
he could work for Fendi, and then he started working for Chanel. Totally changed Chanel. Chanel was selling perfume. One perfume.
Yeah, one
perfume. And that was it. In the 80s, Chanel was dead. After Coco Chanel died, and even before she died, they weren't doing anything of interest. And he mm-hmm. came in.
It was seen as like the brand for old ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was ladies who lunch. That was
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Old rich ladies who wore plaid. Or wore a tweed.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the only reason they wore tweed is because they wore Chanel.
And yeah. that was it. Yes. And that was it. Whereas he came in, and I mean, part of the things that drives me crazy is that with this collection, he'd be 80 looks, especially at Chanel when it's all the tweed, essentially. It's just the same fucking look every time. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, it can be really boring. But on the other hand, the slight variations that he was able to consistently deliver on the Chanel suit is mind-blowing. These tiny yeah. tiny switches and variables that he would just play with, shape and size and proportion and color and all these details.
Well,
and
in
stuff.
In reality, it was his mind who would play with it, and yes. I'm sure sometimes he would have to sketch over to someone.
He'd always
in
put
the
it
atelier.
On the same body anyway. So
exactly,
there you go.
and
some skinny white
maybe
girl.
Maybe sometimes, yeah. Like I think it's a feat of engineering because there's some shit that goes down on the Chanel runway. It's like that jacket. By any means necessary, should not sit like
yeah.
that on a human body. There is some kind of padding and infrastructure in that jacket for that to sit the way it does, and that is a testament to all the women who helped create his collections.
Yes, all those women who slaved yeah. for thousands of hours in the workshops mm-hmm. to make his weird drawing that he'd barf out.
Yeah,
because he'd just wake up and literally just draw 100 things.
Yeah,
like, that's just how his brain. Worked. It was literally on another level. And I don't know anybody else, or I haven't heard of anybody else who consistently just would output that amount of stuff all the time. And to be so consistent. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's boring because they all look the same. But then as you pay attention, they're not all the same.
Yeah, when you look at Chanel, the Chanel in the 80s versus Chanel in the 90s were not the same.
No.
Not even close. And they're not the same as it was then either now. Like the... Mm-hmm. The number of reinventions he's done at Chanel while somehow maintaining the Chanel
the
suit.
The integrity of the brand.
Yeah. Is pretty insane.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, you're right. It's unmatched, really.
No one can figure out what else to do.
Because, look at every other
And that's just
every
the
other
Chanel
house.
Stuff. We haven't even talked about any of the other shit he did.
Mm-hmm. Like, every other house that, of that caliber, of the Chanel caliber, so like Dior and Saint Laurent and
Givenchy,
they have had Balmain a rotating door of creative directors since their original creative directors left. And I guess, and then Carl's been like the only one who's been able to maintain, I don't know, his vision and make sure that vision is leading to the success of the brand as a whole, not just in the categories that he has direct hand in.
Yeah.
Which is like the couture and the ready to wear and the accessories and whatnot. Like it transcended into perfumes and Chanel being able to have the resources to buy up pretty much every couture workshop in Paris.
Yeah, the shoemakers, yeah. the hat makers, the beading, the embroidery, they all work for Chanel.
Yeah, this one person's vision, singular vision and like mastery of a code of ethics that was established over a very short period of time. By Chanel, it's I don't know. Of course, you need to tip your hat to that as a creative, but then there's
one thing too about him just having the creativity to make that last. But also there's more to having a job at that level than just doing your job.
Yeah,
there's the politics, there's the nepotism, there's the
dealing
there's
with the
butt kissing, there's the and he managed to do all that at an extremely high level as well. And maintain, like he wasn't unseated. It's not like, oh yeah, he designed a Chanel for, a dozen years and then he moved on. No, he was not unseated. Mm-hmm. there was no young upstarts to come. And the brand never decided, say, you know what, I think you're done.
Yeah.
He managed to keep those relationships to keep himself employed.
He immortalized himself while he was still alive. In many ways. He created such an aura around him that made him untouchable. And unique and powerful and
irreplaceable.
An enigma.
Yes. Wrapped in a Chanel suit.
Exactly. And I think that had a lot to do with why people were so quick to forgive his shortcomings as a human being, as a
Yes, and to overlook. A very
wealthy white man of a certain generation.
Yeah, and overlook all the other things that he said and did and promoted.
It's like all those other powerful guys who find themselves in situations that they would rather not be because they've been caught doing something they shouldn't be doing, or they've said the wrong thing and didn't apologize
for it. No, they have to eat crow about it or whatever, right?
But he...
Somehow he managed to escape all of those things.
Well, he also employs thousands and thousands of people. So, I mean, you can't... He singularly did that for all of the reasons that we've just stated. He couldn't be replaced. And if he was replaced, then it would disrupt the industry, literally. Yeah. So then what do you do? Well, you ignore those...
you just keep things as they are. You just
keep things status quo because... All of these
people need him. It ain't that broke.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, everybody in the industry knows that fat people aren't welcome here.
Sure. Just less than skinny people, just in general.
Plus, he's a crazy old man, so let him, you know, yell about fat girls, you know.
Yeah.
And so he would get a pass.
He somehow managed to, balance it in a way.
Not for everyone, but for the people who it needed to be balanced for sure.
The people who didn't care or that they were alienating.
Yeah, no.
A certain segment of the population, because these people already don't buy their product.
Yes. Yep. Or they're not. Yeah, it's all the other rich white dudes that employed him, that kept him employed, that are the heads of these giant multinational corporations who own these big brands. They're not being insulted by him talking about fat people in sweatpants at home eating chips, watching Chanel shows, because that's not them. They are rich white dudes.
And they've also probably covered up things that were a lot worse before.
Oh, for sure. This is nothing.
You know, let him say whatever crazy shit he wants to say about Adele because he's a crazy old man and Adele will be fine.
Yes. And Chanel will be fine and Adele will be fine and they can both continue to live.
Chanel and Adele will both be fine.
Oh, I was listening to an interview. It was a Business of Fashion. We talked about them very briefly off the top. Business of Fashion. Imran Ahmed, who runs Business of Fashion, was interviewing Tim Blanks, who is one of the most famous fashion journalists. He's been working my entire life. I've always known Tim Blanks and his British accent coming through my television on Fashion File and Fashion Television and stuff. And he has known Carl. He'd interviewed him
hundreds
of times over the last 30 years or so. And he had a very interesting perspective. And by no means am I apologizing or condoning any of his behavior. But Carl was one of the few gay men who escaped
the 80s
and the AIDS crisis in the 70s. And he saw everybody die.
There was a really interesting...
So how much did that affect him and turn him inwards? And also he was, for many, many years, he was an asexual being.
Mm-hmm.
He never had... intimate relationships. He never had boyfriends or girlfriends or partners or, he had people that there was rumors of interest in, but that was about it because he had one
lover
of his life back in the day.
In the 80s.
And they died. 70s. And he never recovered.
I think we've talked about that on a previous episode.
Yeah. Maybe we talked with one of the documentaries or something we watched about him. Oh, he literally just shut off that part of his brain and channeled that energy into his work. And that is all he ever did for the rest of his life.
There's an interesting podcast, The Cut on Tuesdays. I don't know if you guys listen to
it. I listened to the part Karl Lagerfeld one about that.
Yeah, they talked a bit about that and about Tim Blanks and that the whole the AIDS epidemic, which is something you would never align with Karl Lagerfeld.
No.
And it was a really, a really interesting perspective.
But of course, he was in the middle of it. He was in New York City. He was in London. He was in Paris during these, he was a Studio 54. He was in all these people, with all these people in that age bracket, doing all those things, probably hanging out at all those places. But you just never associate him. Maybe because we're just that too young for it too, right? By the time we were born, that was all.
Yeah, our whole lifetime he has been asexual.
Just some weird alien asexual man.
Yeah.
He's been a caricature of himself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that was part of what
I think that led to this where it was so easy to throw to the side his indiscretions is because you can't really take someone seriously when, or you're not supposed to. I guess he used the fact that people didn't really take him seriously in a greater context outside of the fashion world where everyone was so ready to lick his boots because he was held up as this genius. And in many respects, that move of his to create such a persona was armor against a lot of his less than, I don't know, humane opinions about certain groups of people in the world.
Yes, isn't that what Tom, that he didn't take, that he wasn't a part of.
Yeah. Isn't that what Bill Cunningham said? Fashion is the armor that we use to protect ourselves from the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was him. And he just happened to coincide. And he just had
a huge PR machine behind him to be able to.
Yes. And he timed it specifically. He timed it really well, too. By the time the 90s came around and fashion was becoming more of an everyday thing for people and more accessible to people, and celebrities are now on the covers of magazines, and you know the name of the designer at whatever fashion brand. He was the first. He was driving that train.
Yeah.
Like, he was on top of it. And mm-hmm. he somehow figured out that if he, like, and around, it was the late 90s when he lost a bunch of weight, right? And he was feeling, he lost like 100 pounds or something ridiculous. And then rebranded himself into the Carl we've known for the last 20 years, right, in this century. And he managed to take a persona or the, whatever, this cult of personality that he had slowly been building over the last century of the 20th century, and then turn it and just fucking crank it up to 11, right? And just, like, embrace it and dive head into being a cartoon.
A brand.
And he was in on the, like, he is dry. He is the joke. He knows it. He's the one. He's setting up the punchlines. And someone knocks him down and he says, you're welcome.
And taking the paychecks and yes. watching the brand do well. And I mean, it's not an accident, is obviously, as you say, like, there wasn't. It's one of the reasons that he's remained that high caliber of a, not high caliber necessarily of a designer, that's independent of this, but he's remained a guy to be talked about.
Yes.
Because of that caricature that he created of himself and yeah. for himself.
And it's a weird line to try to figure out how much of this stuff did he actually believe?
Well, too, I think, right? I know at some point when you're that successful, his and that
age,
big.
For his age, his cultural upbringing, his financial status, I think a lot of it would just be what a rich old German dude would think.
Yeah.
That fat people and immigrants and women and whatever, all these wonderful things that he would say about people who were not him. And then also him being a fucking camera hog.
Yeah.
And just loving having a microphone put in his face and saying stupid shit. And then having everybody talk about it.
Yeah.
And then having that cult of all these yes people around him too, right? Like, he has not lived in the real world for 50 years.
No,
he does not live in the world that everyone else lives in.
What's Will Ferrell's character in Zoolander?
Mugatu,
yes. Yeah. There's a certain, you can see where that inspiration came from.
It is not a leap. Because he was so... The work he did was so specific for a long time until then you get into the diffusion lines and stuff and collaborations, and that kind of made things go snaky a little bit, but he managed to stay on brand for himself. But he worked in such a limited sphere that he worked with the same people and he talked to the same people, and he, you know, he didn't ask anybody for anything. He just told you. And what are you going to do? Say no?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Disagree.
No, you don't fucking do
it.
No.
You do it. You figure out a way. Even if it means you are taking two red eyes back to back for a fitting in New York City or whatever bullshit mm-hmm. comes up, you do not say no to him.
Taking a part of hem to move it eighth of a centimeter,
3/16 of an inch or something. Yeah.
1 centimeter. That's all we need, is 1 centimeter. That, like, seeing that shit in all these documentaries with him, and he made sure to do it in front of the camera for every single documentary of him doing a fitting in that.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's just... Like,
and that, all those employees that, and the customer, and, you know, like, it's part of the whole pantomime of it or whatever. Like,
was it just like showing that that's how much he cared for the Chanel customer? If it needed to be 1 centimeter shorter, they would do it. Or was it just like him
throwing his weight around?
Throwing his weight around.
Yeah.
When really,
because he could.
No one's going to notice if that skirt is a centimeter longer or shorter or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, whatever, you know, minute detail decided.
After they just spent, I don't know, dozens or maybe hundreds of hours getting that skirt to be what it is.
To be that.
Yeah, to be literally perfection.
Which matched the drawing probably that he did probably, initially, exactly. And then he's changed his mind since. Yeah. which just happens a lot.
But when you're that high level of, there's that many people for whom like their income relies.
Yeah. Like right? you said, all these people he employs, right?
He employs and the customers are, you know, relying on, like, he's hands-on in a way that most leaders of most houses,
huge corporations,
and yeah. huge companies like that. He's not the leader of the company, but, you know, him having a hand in that actually is quite significant in like, how many times would you go to, you know, like Burberry? You're not going to get the same level of care from going to Burberry and getting a trench coat. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, who knows about other big houses, but like Versace, I doubt it. You know what I mean? You're just not getting.
And on one level, they're the same. They're the same caliber as Chanel, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Yeah. It just isn't the same. And why? Because
of him.
Of him. And it's interesting too. You look at the timelines. This just sort of occurred to me. But when you look at the timelines, you're saying of when he sort of turned himself into this caricature persona in the 90s and lost all the weight and sort of married himself to this image of himself. That coincides pretty tightly with when Anna Wintour took over at Vogue. So those two have been in that forefront.
Calling the shots.
Calling the shots in a lot of ways for the same amount of time. So there's, yeah. it's no coincidence that those relationships need to be nurtured.
And they feed and off have each other.
Yeah. And feed off of each other. Yeah.
Oh, it's creepy. It's gross almost, in my opinion.
This is what I have been feeling about Chanel for a while.
Yeah.
Not Chanel specifically, I should say, but about Carl. Mm-hmm. Like,
move on. Make room.
There are so many talented designers who would do amazing things with that brand. Go,
just let them do it.
Go.
And I would
away.
Wager a guess to say that almost every designer in the world knows exactly what they would do if they had that atelier at their fingertips.
Oh, for sure, they've all thought about it.
Oh yes,
absolutely.
And if you haven't thought about it, and you're at that level where you're going to be considered to take over Chanel, then maybe you should reconsider your career options. Maybe, I don't know. It's just like, yeah, it's like, it's just so hard. It's just like someone who is shown time and again that they're a foul human being on many levels, on many mm-hmm. platitudes. It's just like,
go away.
And we know how something like that can last for so long, and how so many people will still
continue to let it happen.
It has a lot to do with the money. Like, shouldn't, like, the people at Vogue were never going to not run Chanel ads
yeah.
in their issues.
Yeah.
They were never not going to take that advertising check.
And after a certain point, the people who are running Chanel, I think, are they part of LVMH?
No.
Chanel's
independently
not.
Owned.
They're on. So that's it. Yeah. So they would never, there isn't anyone to be like.
There's no stockholders to answer to. Or
And no one would yeah. tell Carl, no, you're done here. It would never happen because he would never go.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Well, that's the thing. This was the only way it would end.
Yeah.
He was going to, yeah.
As much as we say, like, you should fuck off, make room for other people. You've done your time. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Have a retirement.
I'm sure.
First of all, I don't think he could retire.
Contract.
No,
I don't think he could retire. That's just not the way he's wired. Just yeah. like as a human
or
being.
Or maybe it's in his contract that he's not allowed to retire.
Yeah. Maybe he wrote it in like that. Who knows?
Yeah.
Because megalomaniac wouldn't put it past him.
There's been a lot of things coming up. Like, there's this whole Kanye West situation where his contract says that he's not allowed to retire with his record label.
Yeah.
His record label says he's not, like, they're like, you owe us an album every so often.
Every X many you years know? Or
and
whatever,
it's just,
yeah.
It's so weird that, like, ugh, God, it creeps me out, this whole big business moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, and somebody else was asking me, like, when all this shit happened right after he died, and people were talking about all the dumb, fucking, horrible shit he said. And somebody was like, oh, my God, how do you know this? And I'm like, because he said it into every microphone that anybody ever put in front of his face. It's not like
yeah.
you caught some like weird aside that he was having with somebody at a party and
yeah.
you overheard this like
this
tantalizing
yeah.
like bit of gossip. No. He said it into the camera.
You didn't even really have to ask.
No. You asked about something entirely different. And then he just yeah. gave you this thing about, you know.
And by the way, if you don't know, he had an extremely narrow definition
of
beauty.
Yes, 100%.
It was white and skinny and tall, and that's about it.
That's about it.
There was not a lot of room for
like
diversity.
Renaissance features, basically.
Yeah, there yeah. was not a lot of room for inclusion of people of color. Certainly not people of size.
Ooh.
Certainly not people of varying abilities. It was tall and slim.
And European.
And European.
And that was it.
Of every Chanel runway in the last, I don't know, 10 years compared to every other major catwalk in the last 10 years. And there, in most cases, there's a visible shift towards diversity on the runway. If it's not bodies, it's people of color. Mm-hmm. And like Naomi Campbell and Iman are like huge advocates of diversity on the runways. And like they've, like even Naomi Campbell has
said, she's still friends with Carl.
She's still friends with him, but she didn't not criticize Chanel.
She didn't let it fly.
Yeah, she would still openly criticize. She's like, oh, when will a black girl open and close at Chanel? Probably never. Yeah. And you can look in the last 10 years and it would probably be, I don't know. I don't have this knowledge, but like, I'm sure you could look and look who opens and closes Chanel, who's put into those positions of, like, as far as a model goes, that's a position of significance, opening and closing a show.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal for a model's career. And
endorsements, forget it.
Yeah, they're like, look at who promotes Chanel Beauty, Chanel watches, Chanel perfume.
White ladies.
White women.
Yeah. So there's that. And he was quite vocal about that. He was unapologetic about that. So that is a problem.
I had another friend of mine who I was talking about it, somebody who's not in the industry at all, or, you know, just knows of Karl Lagerfeld in the universe, but not any specifics necessarily. And we were talking about how she has an experience with eating disorder, so that's where she was coming from. And she got very riled up about the fat phobic stuff and the size and body type comments that he would make all the time. And I said, yeah, he was like, you know, quote, normal size when he was starting out in his 20s, and then you get a little bit thicker. And then the Carl from the 80s that I fell in love with, that we all fell in love with the suits and the sunglasses, the ponytail and the fan. And he was a little bit on the chubby side, but he was still, but back then he was just some weirdo who could just talk till you're blue in the face. He would never get blue in the face because he could just keep going. You remember him talking to Jeannie Becker and stuff on fashion television? And he could just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and he sounded so fancy and so educated and yada, 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 yada. And then he got skinny, probably in a fucking weird, unhealthy way, and then probably stayed that way in fucked up, weird, unhealthy ways. Mm-hmm. And then would use his weight loss to then shame other people. Well, I did it. What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. No, you're fatter since I saw you last. He literally told that to Tim Blanks. He's like, you're fat now. And then Tim was like, what the fuck am I supposed to say to that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, get on it. Okay.
I still got to get my sound bites and my interview and hand it in the next couple days.
He's still got to do his job.
Still got to do my job. Yeah.
But how, like, the psychology of this man is a pool that is a well with no bottom. You know, like,
but
it is,
I mean,
so
as
deep.
As far as his contemporaries in this industry, they're not far off from those points of views, you know?
No.
Like,
and we're seeing him in 2019. I'm sure had the other people like YSL and all these other people, had they physically lasted longer than they have, who've all passed away, who knows what ideas they would also have. He's just the loudest and the one that's left.
I think the loss of Carl and his stranglehold over the industry is going to create a lot of change within fashion, I think.
I'm excited.
Now that there's a woman at the head of Chanel.
I'm interested to see what she would do because she's been working with Carl for 30 years.
I hope it's just not Carl Light.
Exactly. Part of me is like, yes, awesome. You've been fucking doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Been under someone's thumb for the last...
Yes, for your whole career. Yeah. And she was always right there. Virginie Viard.
But also, if it's Carl Light, in terms of the design and what's coming down the runway...
It's going to
sell. As long as it's like tightened up and there's not, you know, 85 looks, there's maybe 58 instead of... like. Yeah. Great.
I'm interested to see what kind of budgets they're going to give her. Are they going to give her a lower budget because she's a woman and they don't want to spend the money?
And she's not Carl.
Well, I was going to say maybe because she's not Carl. Who knows?
There is some sexism wrapped up in that.
Oh, yeah.
Also,
absolutely. But I don't I would think that the first argument that they would, if they were going to give her less of a budget, the argument would be because she's not Carl, not because she's a woman. But who knows?
But there's all. But I mean, my argument as a creative director.
I mean, who knows?
My argument as a creative director taking over after someone that iconic was to be there is a level. There's a standard that needs to be maintained at Chanel,
and that I think, he strived and maintained for 50 years.
And for them to not give her the crazy sets and the crazy 85 collections and access to all of these ateliers just because she's not
and the Grand
legend.
Palais in Paris and the to Grand show Palais, in yeah. It's and just like, yeah.
It's like it would be a damage to the brand, I think, for them.
Yeah, they have to maintain it. Whether or not she can sustain it is one thing, but the brand would feel they need to.
Or maybe she's been sustaining it for quite a while.
Sure, who knows what their dynamic was.
Yeah, like...
Right?
Maybe she's been the one connecting it to a modern time and obviously it's a white French woman. So maybe that's why some of these...
So far, yeah.
These messages have kind of fallen short at Chanel in the last while. Like importing an iceberg to talk about global warming and that's just
whole fake feminism show that was fucked up too. Jesus Christ, that was like, so stupid.
I mean, there's just
the Indian one where it was all appropriation, or the Egyptian one that was all appropriation.
Let's not forget that Carl put headdresses on white models in Texas.
Yeah,
and that was his homage to Americana.
That doesn't sit right. You might be right. Who knows? Who knows what? I mean, who knows? I'm really curious to see how it'll go.
I don't think she'll be.
I'm curious what she does. I'm curious how long she'll last. I don't know how long it's going to be.
I think it'll be 40 years or 30 years or whatever the hell it was.
Probably like three.
I think someone they're shopping around already.
Oh, for sure.
Who do you want?
Unless she blows us out of the water.
Yeah. Who knows?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, you may be right. Like, who knows how many strings she's been pulling behind the
scenes. Sarah Burns lasted longer than everyone thought
she was. Absolutely. She's doing great stuff. What's Phoebe Philo doing these days?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. That's what I want. I want Phoebe at Chanel.
That would be...
She took over Chloe after Carl left.
Yeah. She knows,
she can take over
she knows what it's
after
like.
Carl left.
A lot of people are saying that...
What's Rafe doing there? Raf Simons doing these days.
Oh, Raf is running from the fashion conglomerate as fast as he can.
After his Dior debacle, he's like,
and then Calvin Klein going up in flames. Yeah.
Yes.
They're ending their... Calvin Klein is ending their ready-to-wear offering. They're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
What are they doing then?
They're doing jeans and then by appointment. Nothing in between.
I think they're doing some underwear too.
Yeah.
Because they do a lot of business with
underwear jeans.
They're cashing those underwear checks.
But lots of that underwear stuff is licensed. Well,
yeah, I was going to say it's licensed out. It's always jeans.
Calvin Klein, they bought back all their licenses.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
That was part of, well, then there you go.
Oh, really? Well, maybe they can make it work.
Which is annoying because there were some Calvin Klein underwear that I really liked and they don't make them anymore.
Damn it.
Shit. Yeah, I should go to the Bay.
Load up. An undershirt, some boxer shorts. Oh, man.
Yeah, there's some big changes. It'll be an interesting year to see what happens. This time next year, I wonder what it'll look like. It'll take a while to get there.
Yeah, the next year or 5 years, who knows, right?
Is there going to be a visible difference between Carl's Chanel and the new Chanel?
I think there would have to be. I think
there has to be some sort of...
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some sort of departure or some kind of like...
I think...
You know, whether it's...
Some sort of pivot or something.
Yeah.
Not a turn, but like a little slight pivot.
Almost like an homage, like the end of an era.
Yeah, there'll be a couple of those.
A tipping of a hat kind of a thing.
And then hopefully...
Yeah.
Because a lot of young people are wearing Chanel these days. Mm-hmm. It's young people. It's not an old lady brand, right?
It's still also an
Chanel
old lady
has brand, now reached that level that of legend. Yes. You know, it's just like they've done such a good job at educating people on why they should give this brand so much reverence. And now who
and
is
money.
That going to be handed to?
Yeah.
Like how many generations?
It's basically
three,
a cash cow. You can design whatever you want. Someone in the world's going to buy it just because it's Chanel.
Yeah. Well, look now. They're making those fucking hideous sneakers that everyone's making.
Oh, I'll be glad when that's over.
But that's also Carl. Like somehow, despite how insulated and protected and oblivious to the real world he was so ahead of the game. In so many ways. And he had the finger on the pulse. He was the first person to do a collaboration with a fast fashion brand. He was the first one because he saw it happen. And that entirely shifted the retail landscape and the luxury
label landscape too, mm-hmm. of opening that up and making it accessible and not poo-pooing it. Because, you know, oh, you're working with Zara, you're working with H&M. And Carl's like, fuck yeah, I am.
I mean, cash the check too. Yeah. yeah, but that
because could, he saw yeah. the value and the importance of that market space, that head space, and just the idea of
training that customer
yes.
into mm-hmm. buying luxury,
yes,
and to looking at luxury in a different way, not looking at it as something that's unattainable.
Yes, you know? Yeah, totally yeah. out of your realm of experience, and it's yeah. never going
to
happen.
And now, of course, you can sit in your bed naked if you want to with snacks and watch the Chanel Couture show on your phone. I couldn't do that when I was younger.
Oh, hell no.
You had to wait a couple of days before even photos were up online.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's just...
We had to wait until Jeannie Becker showed us. File. Yeah. yeah.
I remember back in style.com days before it was bought by Vogue,
mm-hmm.
when the reviews were actually reviews and not... advertisements.
Yeah, exactly. And just blowing smoke up their butts.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had actually like interesting things to say about
yeah. Sarah Moore before she
oh boy.
Had to start playing the game to pay the rent, I suppose. Yeah. Pay the mortgage probably.
Yeah, probably. So yeah, it's left a big void. It's also somebody of that age who just had like to have in one person such a repository of history. And straight up knowledge, like historical knowledge, the shit this guy knew would put an encyclopedia to shame. And to not have that in a person now and have that spread out over the internet and all these people and collaborations with people, like to have to piecemeal that together and not just have it in one person is going to be a very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I would wager to say impossible.
Yes. Experiment.
But also,
you know. Yeah, and I don't know how much people want that anymore, too.
I'm just sort of at this point, too, where I'm like, we can stop praising rich old white men now.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Can we be done with this? He gave his entire fortune to a fucking cat. Can we?
Are you serious?
Yes,
Choupette got a fuckload of money.
Choupette, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, I don't know the exact number.
Oh, God. But the trade Choupette. Should have gotten their penny, pretty penny as well.
Got a lot of money.
Poor Baptiste.
Oh, boy.
But so I get it. You're a crazy old man. Can we move on? Can we get some people of color on the runways? Can we get some people of color heading design working, houses?
Yes, somehow please? Working in the inside of the industry. Can That'd we, be great. It's happening other places.
I mean, it's fucking
and it's going
time.
Well.
We're just, I'm just
And it's
like,
cool stuff. Check it out sometime.
I know. I mean, as close to the pulse as he was off the mark on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
On the people side of things, he was off the mark.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah.
He Culturally, was also, for his...
Finger on the pulse. Socially.
Socially, not so much. Not.
Sure.
And yeah. Yeah.
To be fair, his customer for a long, long time that he inherited from Coco Chanel was a rich, right, Republican customer.
Yeah.
You know? So... He's not off from his original customer base. I'm just, can we please
move on?
Move on.
Yeah. I was a little off topic, but I was talking to somebody about the Catholic Church because a whole bunch of shit had been happening recently at the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And having these big symposium about abuses and stuff. Oh, I can't wait for all these old fuckers to die.
Yeah. Can they die please. Now, please?
Can they just die and take all that with them?
This is a similar kind of feeling I
Same
have.
Same kind of thing.
This sort of yes. old guard white, rich, old
European
dude. European bullshit. Move along.
You've had your time.
We're done with your lifetime We're reclaiming appointments. Our time. Yeah, reclaiming my time.
The unfortunate reality of that is that those people had children and they passed on those values to them. So there are people our age who think exactly the same way these men do.
And you're not wrong.
No, yeah, and you're just hoping they're less in numbers, but you're not wrong. There's no guarantee of that.
There are also
and
a lot of people
And they still operate within
didn't.
A system that values them and yeah. keeps them in positions of power. You know, like this is a much bigger discussion than just letting old men die.
Yes.
You know, it's just like there are people in the fashion industry right now who are our age who operate the same way Carl did. And
yeah,
nobody bats an eyelash
and nobody cares.
Because they have varying levels of power.
And they have a last you know? Name that people recognize and mm-hmm. yeah.
And but it, I
and
think in, yeah, in general.
And, yeah. And you can look at brands like it doesn't need to be a brand like Chanel that has worldwide recognition and worldwide esteem and respect. It can be a fuckboy fashion brand that's made here in Vancouver who's run by some asshole. But people still
Present company excluded.
Well, not us, because the girls are in the know, okay? The hags are in the know.
The girls are batting their lashes, girl.
Yes, but
we're not letting that go by.
But it's just like,
yeah, it's a valid point.
It's like this problem is not going to die with the old. This problem is replicating itself because it's not so much the generation, it's the situation in which things form. You know, the fashion industry is always going to be a sucker for
rich people keeping other people rich, too.
Yes.
Or someone who's making somebody a lot of money, or somebody with a lot of money. You know, it's just
good old tokenism here and there, right? Oh, just God, to show you're kind of got some good going, and then
But yeah. I would argue that there have been more people across generations, our generation, younger generations, generation between us and Carl, who are getting real tired of this old guard shit and are starting to stir the pot and get a little
and
bit
make changes.
Mad.
Oh, yes, darling.
And let's
it's
hope.
Great to see.
Let's hope that. That keeps going. Let's hope that social media keeps that shit going.
I was just going to say, and then how the media has changed as well. It was Anna Wintour just fucking like circle jerking each other all the time.
Totally.
And now bloggers, influencers, especially shit on them all the time sometimes. But what they do, they are opening up opinions,
alternative
and
lines
opinions.
Of dialogue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's great. So how did Virgil Abloh get at Louis Vuitton? Probably a lot of that.
Also, I would argue,
and
present
stuff like
company
that, you know?
Included, the work that you are doing, Evan, is stirring the fucking pot. It's not letting shit just go by and be the thing and because
be pretty.
You know, yeah, just because it's always been pretty and it's always been the same guys pulling the strings. There's a lot of strings that are starting to fray, and there's people who are actively trying
and
to
pulling
fray
them in different directions.
But so, like. Thank you very
much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. But also, like, the reason why I think it can't be thrown out the fact that I am where I am is because I fit into the mold of what people want a fashion designer to look like. I'm white
and
passing.
And be and deliver.
I'm a man, and I'm thin. You know, like, I fit into
the gay
what
part
the fashion,
doesn't hurt either.
And I'm gay as shit. So it's just like it's easier for people to take what I have to say. When it doesn't come out of a mouth that they instantly are programmed
is incredible.
To think less than.
Yeah.
I
you know
agree.
What I mean?
And I think that gives you power.
Yeah.
Because you are in a position to say the things and which you are doing that go against what's out there and that just being consumed.
And also deliver.
Oh, I do my best.
Right? Right? That's
and
what I mean.
Deliver a product that is
different.
At a level comparable to a lot of other people who are the old guard.
Yeah. I totally agree. And like, yeah, Carl knew. I mean, he was a wealth of knowledge and yeah. I mean, I get it.
But also, he's old as fuck. He had time to get it all.
When you're that old and you only do one thing your whole life, yeah, you're going to know a lot about it.
Yeah.
Move along. Like,
when your
I'm
little
just
job
ready
is just to do research
person.
and be inspired, yes. Of course you're going to know all that shit.
Of course.
You know, there's people like us who have these breadths of knowledge, and maybe they're not as expansive or refined
as
Carl's might be. But like, who's to say that that narrative isn't exactly what Chanel needs to give it its next revitalization?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like the thing that always brings me back to Chanel is the creed, how that brand came to be was this throwing away of these expectations that women had on them and the way they needed to dress. And that has always been inspiring to me. And then you go and see what Chanel is now, and it's a sea of robots with the Chanel double C's stamped on their forehead.
On somewhere else.
You know, it's just like, and where is that individuality and where is that ease and where is that like
rebelliousness and whimsy and femininity and, you know, all these
and
things.
The rejection of norms and the throwing away of convention and the doing it my way.
And looking up for yourself. Be like, this is what I want to wear. This is what I need to feel like. This is what I need to do the things I want to do with my life. And that is not what Chanel is doing.
No.
Like, he cook for that fucking feminism, that tone deaf, actively tone deaf show that he did. What he could have done was just go back to every original drawing that Coco had done when she first started and tweak those original shapes. And that would have
been
a much more powerful statement than walking down the catwalk with a fucking
I'm a feminist or whatever.
In a $200,000.
In a $200,
shift dress.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he will never be replaced, blah, 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 blah. But.
But.
He saw to the fact that his place in
he does
the
not need to be replaced.
Has been cemented.
Yeah, he does not need to be replaced.
It is a good thing that we're talking about his replacement because it is long overdue.
Yeah,
yeah.
May he rest in peace. Mm-hmm.
Ish,
ish. He'll be fine.
What is
Carl's
your?
He's gonna be fine.
I tried to find the fashion show of that fucking pink feathery tunic thing that It wasn't Kristen McNenemy. It was the other. It wasn't her. It wasn't Sinead O'Connor.
Erin O'Connor?
Erin O'Connor wore it. Was it Erin O'Connor?
Maybe.
With a wig on? Because I remember long hair.
Maybe.
Where? When?
It was a Chanel Couture show. And it was the last thing that actually made me like emotional with seeing, like, give me that sensation of like, oh my God, look at that. It's like so.
Like in the last year?
It felt like it looked like what I thought Chanel should look like. Mm. And like, it gave me that connection to the past, and it was like flapper-esque, but it wasn't like a costume. It was covered in feathers, and it had like little
like
bits
those marabou
sequins.
Feathers.
Yeah, those like
yeah, I think
those
I like know what you're talking
about. No, it was ostrich, I think.
Mm. But like the little, but they were like pulled
very
individually,
wispy, and you have to like curl them by hand and all this stuff. Yeah, I can't remember, but that look is like the last thing I remember, and it was when we were in school. I think that collection came out.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So just 10 years.
Just more of that. Yeah, just within the last decade.
Just roll your Rolodex back 8 years.
About
maybe not 80 10.
Collections.
Yeah, seriously.
About 30,000 looks.
Mm-hmm. Jeez Louise.
Well, let's remember that one then. Let's
remember that.
Yes. And I do recommend going back and watching interviews of him.
Watch Signer Chanel.
Yes.
Fascinating, because it has a lot to, it interviews, more so interviews the people who actually make the clothes rather than Carl.
Just him. There was a I forget what it was called, but there's a documentary just about him.
Lagerfeld Confidential.
Yes, that one.
That one's fascinating.
That one's great. Because you get to see like his house and like his routines mm-hmm. and like how many phones he has.
Doesn't he do a photo shoot with Cecil Beaton, or is that another documentary?
Might be another one.
That's a different one, I think.
Man, yeah, there's a lot going
Lesbian.
On.
Lesbians.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've said all there is we can say.
We're just going to go back and forth between how awesome he was and how terrible he was.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
That's fine. It will never cease.
Humans are complex people. And Karl Lagerfeld, as much as he didn't want to believe it, from all accounts, still human.
Still human. Yeah. Darn it.
Still part of the human race. And we have
to move on to Obsess, I think.
It's true. We've given him a lot of time. We figured if we gave him one episode, we could fill it.
We could fill it.
And then probably a little bit more, but we'll save you the rehashing of...
And maybe we'll come back in a year and talk
how
about...
How if you buy sweatpants, you've given up on life. And as someone who wears sweatpants every single
day. And then you
day.
Can you buy probably $85 wear Karl Lagerfeld sweatpants.
Oh, fuck. Oh, I love it so much. It's the worst and the best.
And the best.
Wrapped up.
All right. Let's move on. We'll obsess. Yes. We'll break. We'll come back. We'll obsess.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, 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 yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You're listening to the Fashion Hangs.
And we're back. For real, we're back now. We pressed record and it's back. And Dave knows to cut out all that talk.
All that nonsense.
All that nonsense mean beforehand. But we're back.
We're back to Obsess.
We've taken a breath and got over our rage for now. For Karl Lagerfeld. Rage
for
and
that,
love.
For that in particular.
Rage and reverence.
Yes. Rage and reverence.
Reverence and reverence.
You can be both
rage.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one and only forever. Karl Lagerfeld. I don't know anybody else who would be able to maintain the levels of both of those feelings in me, the love and the hate.
But that is the enigma.
But that is the enigma, Carl. The Kaiser, the one and only. Anyway, enough talking about Carl. We can talk about the things we like to talk about now.
Let's talk about ourselves,
yes, please.
Yes. Can we?
We've barely talked about ourselves.
Oh my God.
The last 10 minutes. Let's come back to that. Let's make it about us.
But isn't that a podcast? Just talking about yourself?
What about us? It's why you're here.
I will go first because mine's sort of it's a neither here nor there.
Fantastic.
In addition to the NyQuil that I've been
hopped up on.
Hopping all month. There is a restaurant in Vancouver called Banditas. and it's one of my favorite like burrito taco situations. It's so goddamn good. And they have this like pickled cabbage that they put on all of their
things.
I'm familiar.
And yes, I was like, Evan has
you know what's up.
Yes.
And I'm kind of, I love it. It's like, I eat it off of other people's plates when we go there because it's so good. It's so simple and delicious. And I was like, I need to
figure this out.
Figure out how to make this. It's got to be easy. It's pickling is not hard.
Yeah.
I'm going to figure this out.
That's the hardest part is wait.
It's just waiting. So I found the recipe. I've made so much and consumed so much. Like, I was like, burritos for the week.
Yes.
This is what we're doing for dinner every week, every day this week. So good. So this is my recipe. It's red cabbage or purple cabbage, whatever. Cut it like half and shred it on a mandolin. If you have a mandolin, that's the best. Got to
make it real, real thin and nice.
I like it like sort of stringy.
I just imagined the mini guitar. Like the,
Get out your little teeny guitar. Yeah. Your 12 strings, your 10 strings. Yeah,
Paul McCartney's got one. It's going great.
There was a guy in Get This named Riel Vorio who played the mandolin. He was the only one growing up who played it. And it was like his thing that people would like ask him to go and like
bring your mandolin.
Bring the mandolin.
Breaking out.
Oh, it's so
Riel
it's
named after Louis Riel, of course.
Louis Riel, of course.
Get Riel.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, mandolin is a pretty magical instrument. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
But so you got to shred it like real thin or cut it like slice it really thin. I personally like it like a long and like an almost like a noodle. Like I don't like little tiny.
Like a little coleslaw style.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I don't like a little tiny pieces. Like I want a like long a stringy situation. It's so fucking easy to do. All you do is you take a cup of water. You take a cup of your vinegar of your choice. My personal favorite right now is apple cider vinegar. But you can mix.
Sure, you can test like with whatever.
Some apple cider, some red wine vinegar, whatever. My personal favorite, apple cider vinegar right now. A tablespoon of like a heaping tablespoon of sugar. I put a little bit more sugar because I like it a little bit sweet.
Mm.
A teaspoon of salt, a crushed garlic clove, six-ish peppercorns, whole peppercorns.
Oh, sure.
And you just dissolve it together. Chop up your cabbage. And I have like an old peanut butter jar, like an Adam's peanut butter jar.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I basically like fill that with my
ingredients,
my cabbage, and then pour it in on top so that it sort of matches up. So it's not, because it all has to be submerged. That's the thing, is it all has to be underwater. And then you just leave it out for like 4 to 6 hours and then you can refrigerate it. But you can make it the same day that you're
that you want to eat it.
Cooking. You just have to let it sit for like 4 hours.
You just
got to
do it in the morning before you go for work or whatever.
Or you do it like if you start, like you're making lunch or something.
Start then.
Do it at lunch and then you have it for dinner. And then you just put it in the fridge after 4 to 6 hours.
And you just keep it and just eat it until it's gone.
It's so good and easy and delicious. I'll just like open the fridge, open the jar with a fork.
A handful.
And eat it like ice cream. It's so good and crunchy and salty. I can't tell you how many burritos we've had in the last month.
And it goes with so many things.
It goes with everything. It's so good on...
goes with meat, goes with beans, goes with
beans. Scrambled eggs or like eggs, like a fried egg.
Yeah.
My weekend breakfast is hash browns, I should say. And then 2 fried eggs, melted cheese. If I have avocado, slice that avocado.
Pop that.
And now this fucking pickled cabbage.
Yeah.
Guys. I can't stop. It's so good. My sister asked me the recipe for it. So the picture that I'm looking at for my recipe is
a text.
Screenshot of a text I sent my sister.
Nice.
So I will include that on the
I was going to say, I got a big mason jar upstairs I could fill with cabbage.
It's so easy and so goddamn good. And then you can like tweak it if you want a little bit saltier.
Sure.
More salt, a little bit sweeter.
Sweeter, whatever.
Whatever. More garlicky.
Spicy or whatever.
Put whatever spices you want in there. Oh,
fantastic.
I can't stop.
Katie's going to turn into a cabbage.
That's it. A big old purple cabbage. So that's me. It's neither here nor there, but I'm obsessed.
Sweet.
Moving on. Who's next? Evan, what are you obsessed with?
I had the great honor of going to an all-day Indigenous Brilliance during the Growing Room Festival, which is happening now in Vancouver. It's this huge writing fest. And a couple of friends of mine and a colleague of my brother's or a mentor of my brother's, the Indigenous Brilliance is this monthly reading series that happens in Vancouver, and it's to promote the voices of women and two-spirited writers, Indigenous writers. So it's poetry, prose, fiction.
Nonfiction,
academic writing, sure. Everything. And they had the opportunity to do a whole day event. So it was four separate readings with four, sometimes five different readers. And there was kind of like an overarching theme to every day, to every session
or whatever.
And I was there for the whole day. It was amazing. It was so interesting to see this like breadth and depth of point of views and experiences and perspectives on what it means to be Indigenous in today's climate, today's reality. But I had the opportunity of meeting Ariel Twist, who is an amazing writer coming from, let me just read the damn bio, because Native people don't write their bio for no reason. It's always funny when people ask me to send a bio and they're like, can you keep it to like 40 words, or like, can you keep it tight? And I'm like,
no,
it's going to take me 40 words to explain to you where I come from, who I come from.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, Ariel Twist is a writer and sex educator from George Gordon First Nation, Saskatchewan, and is based out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. She is a Nihiao, which means woman in Cree, two-spirit, trans-femme supernova, writing to reclaim and harness ancestral magic and memories. Within her short career pursuing writing, she's attended the residency at the Banff Center for the Arts and Creativity and has worked published with them, which is the Condé Nast, the Condé Nast online magazine for LGBTQ folks.
Or follow them on Instagram. It's a lovely account. I recommend it.
What is it called?
Them.
Oh, yes.
Canadian Art, The Fiddlehead, and Prism International. And this is Disintegrate, Dissociate, which is what the book that I bought. This is her first book of poetry. And I...
That's impressive.
I have not had the opportunity to read the whole thing, but I read first couple of poems today. And this book in particular, but more so over that, I'm just so obsessed and grateful with the fact that I have so many people to look to who are creating work and talking from this point of view of what it means to be queer and Indigenous and creative. Yeah. and talking about about displacement and that reality in such an unabashed way. It's very inspiring to dull certain aspects of my truth to be palatable within my medium. Like, I think more so in fashion than maybe any other medium, especially in writing, because in writing you're often expected to lay out all of your traumas and all of your hardships for your work to be validated. And I've spoken about this before, I think on the last episode we recorded about my last collection, is like, that's something that I've kind of discovered, is that the things that people have been really interested in within my work have been the things that have been the most difficult revelations that I've come upon, like the census print and it's just great to be able to be in the company of people who understand the realities that we face now.
Right?
Yeah, even though, like, obviously I'm a young person and
circumstances are very different.
And our experiences are very different.
Yeah, but there's still some commonalities there.
But
and strength from each other.
Exactly.
And enough differences that you can learn from each other as well.
Yeah.
Where was that thought? It was going somewhere great and I lost it.
Oh, damn it.
Was it pickled purple cabbage?
You distracted me with the pickled purple cabbage.
Sorry. Which is funny. You were talking about finding people who fit these molds of creative and Indigenous and,
Oh God, I lost anyway, it. It's not going to be what it was.
If you can remember, you'll let us know.
But
you know what? I had a professor in university who said that if you're thinking of something and you couldn't quite articulate it and then you lost it, it probably wasn't
what you meant to say.
Well thought out enough yet anyway.
Yeah.
So we'll let
there
it go.
You go.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing. This has only been a couple of days, and like, I always find that I need some time to like sit with my thoughts. And,
sure. And something like this that's so meaningful and you know, important.
Mm-hmm.
You know. There you go.
Yeah, I'm just excited
in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm excited because. Yeah, like within fashion, maybe like it's expected of me to give like the rose colored glasses version.
Oh, it's got
to
be pretty.
It's got to be pretty. It's got to be
easily digestible. It's got to be interesting. It's got to be
marketable.
Yes, you have to sell it.
You know, and now there's so many people within my generation who are disproving that, but also it's like having this conversation around like, do we need to give everything that we've experienced for people to validate our work, or can we operate within like a different kind of, in a different mood, you know, like there's like it's so rare for someone who's racialized to be able to make a career off of being lighthearted,
or not
yeah, being a caricature of,
yeah,
of who they are, you know, and like and people like Ariel and many of the people, most and all of the people who read it, Indigenous Brilliance, are proving exactly that. We can be true to our experiences, and we can speak the truth, and we can operate with humor and
have meaningful contributions.
Yeah, and we can operate within humor and a little bit of earnestness and vulnerability, and it won't be seen as weakness. You know, like the fact that, like, I never would have thought that I would be able to pick up a poetry book like Ariel's or like Billy Ray's and have it speak to my experiences or something that I can associate better with than other works, like just other queer works in general. You know, it's like the, like Indigenous people and people of color often left out of that narrative when it's coming from a white person's point of view, but.
Or the white people always concentrate on the trauma porn part of it too, mm-hmm, right? Oh, you've overcome so much.
Yeah.
Tell me all about it.
It's like all of these interviews.
I want to hear about all the fucked up stuff you and your people had to endure to like.
Yeah. To get to where you are now.
I'm so sorry.
And isn't that inspiring?
Yeah.
Barf.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh no, you're also just a human.
Yeah.
With
or,
stuff.
Yeah. Also, like in Ariel's case, also I'm a great writer. Or else in the.
And you have talent and interest.
I'm a great policy analyst, or I'm a great lawyer, or I'm a great academic, or a great filmmaker. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that we have a story to tell. It has a lot to do with the fact that we're telling a story that's never been told before, but
in the way that you want to
just because
tell
we're
it.
Telling a story that hasn't been told before isn't that's not the only value to our work.
Yeah,
is that
it's
it
not
hasn't
what the
been
white
told
people
before.
Want to hear.
Yeah, it's like there's value like intrinsically linked into our mediums, and I think that's something that as a collective, we're really trying to like put forward, is that our work has value outside of whatever trauma porn or whatever kind of voyeurism you can get out of reading it. You know, it's great. It's good writing. It's a good design. It's a good film. It's good music.
And you're not doing it for white people to consume.
No.
That's right. Another big part of it too, is that you're doing it for your own, for yourself.
Oh yeah.
For your peers. For your family, for your ancestors, for all these other things, right? It's not just, of course, a part of it is because white people have all
educating
the money.
People, yeah. Yeah.
They're the ones cutting the big checks, but a lot of the time.
One of the best ways you can educate yourself is buy books of poetry like this.
There you go.
And read about somebody else's experience.
Mm.
You know, there'll be things in any right piece of writing or any piece of art or any perspective that an Indigenous person has the generosity to share with the general public, that it's going to be a surprise to someone who's not Indigenous. Mm. But I can read this book and I can see, oh, okay, it's like, okay, you experienced that sensation as well. And obviously my experience as a white passing Métis man, and then Ariel's experience as a trans, dark-skinned, visibly Indigenous woman is completely different. But there are things that with, like all of our ancestors operating within this colonial narrative, there are sensations that kind of like come up that are incredibly
similar,
profound to read on a page, you know, that someone somewhere has like printed that onto a page, and someone has been generous enough to share that.
And then you read it, and then resonates with you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Representation matters.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Oh, man.
And my generation, our only representation growing up was Pocahontas.
Yeah. And is it North bad of 60. That I still really love that movie.
I mean, I have this conversation a lot. I have too. A lot of feelings about it. I have a lot of feelings.
I really do like it. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched it.
And North
it
of
in
60
years.
Was amazing.
North of 60 was amazing.
That's a Canadian show.
That is a Canadian TV show about
a reserve.
This reserve, yeah. North of the 60th parallel. And just this town and how they function and how they knew each other and all the bad things and all the good things. And it was like, oh my God, they're actually fully formed human beings who interact with each other on many levels. Yeah.
Who are
some are jerks and some are heroes and some are awesome and they fuck up and they learn and they love each other. Anyway, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, people are weird. People are funny. People are like, and like that
people
was.
People are badass.
Yeah.
People are whatever.
Yeah. And
anyway.
And I think,
would love to watch that. Where do we get that?
Where if it's on APTN.
They do reruns on APTN, but it's never chronological, so you can't like get attached to the story.
Damn it. My mother and I used to watch it every week. It was the best.
Yeah. What was the American version and the Alaska one? It wasn't the American version, but what was the other
Arctic Air?
No.
Was it an American
with the
one?
Moose walking through the street? Is it the same show that I'm thinking of?
Northern Exposure?
Northern Exposure.
Mm.
Yes.
There's a bunch of white people though.
Yes.
There's some native people.
But the opening credits is what's triggering my memory.
There you go.
I'm playing the North of 60 theme song in my head right now.
Yeah, because 60 is the Arctic Circle, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that was a good show.
And it was in the reserve was supposed to be in Northern Alberta. A fake one.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway.
I'm so glad I went first with my people.
And now I gotta follow this.
Yeah, that's my life. Maybe next week I'll talk about makeup or something like I do before. But like,
don't censor yourself, darling.
Exactly.
Yeah. You do you. You this is your obsession.
Yeah.
And who's to say?
Yeah. Yeah. Who's but thank to you to say? Everyone at Growing Room, and thank you to Jay, my friend Jay Simpson, and Jessica Johns who programmed the whole event. And had all of these.
They're doing important work.
Like the who's who of Indigenous literature was like Ariel Twist, Eden Robinson. Like, oh God, it was so amazing. My friend Emily Riddle spoke and read some amazing shit. Like, oh, just so much brilliance. So
we'll
much
link
brilliance.
It.
Google all these people.
Yeah.
Look at all these things. Expand your minds.
Mm-hmm. I also
that reminds
got
me. I've had Monkey Beach on my bedside table for a long time. I need to read Monkey Beach. Eden Robinson. I knew that. Anyway, that's mine.
That'll be
my future obsession when I actually read that book. Because it's been on my list for a while. Me following Evan's very important work. I tore through Schitt's Creek, which was great.
Love
finally.
Schitt's Creek.
And then there's a lot of David.
Yeah.
In this house. Which David doesn't get because he didn't watch, but it's great. Also,
oh, David, of course.
David.
David. So good.
Oh my God, David.
Oh my God, David. And also, I've talked to my in-laws about this, but not my mother-in-law particularly, but Moira, in many levels, is my mother-in-law. Cookie old lady, lives in her own world.
Alexis?
Darling. Little bit kooky.
That's
David.
Fun.
Anyway, so my mother-in-law is Moira, except Moira's got way better clothes, no offense, Jane. Moira's got way better clothes.
And wigs.
And the wigs. Good Lord. Anyway, so Schitt's Creek's great. Can't wait for more of it. I also tore through the new One Day at a Time.
Loved.
Maybe
loved
the
it.
Only show I never fast forward through the theme song. I hate intros. I hate the credits. They're so long. I don't care.
It just uplifts you.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is life, the one you got. So what you have above. Anyway, it's great. I can recommend it enough. I was recommending to my sister-in-law about how I was not. I got the recommendation from you. I never in a million years would have watched it. But you spoke so highly of it. And I cried, I don't know, every other episode.
Yeah.
The first two seasons. I didn't cry this season with the third one.
This one was a lot more.
But it wasn't as serious.
Yeah. It was pretty. Like, when they dealt with some pretty serious things. But I think, like, there was nothing that was, like, tragic.
Sure.
Yeah. It was just like, ooh, that's tough.
Lydia didn't have a stroke again, so you're fine.
Yeah, there we go.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. But the other thing that I was going to talk
out
about.
For, like, 3 years.
Yeah, it's fine. Get over it. An obsession that I was thinking of recently. I was looking through I was cleaning up my bathroom and trying to, like, figure out. I'm trying to blow through a bunch of products, right?
Oh, yes.
Like empty. There's a podcast called Forever 35 talking about just making empties. Like, just you collect all these damn things and you spend all the stupid money and then you never use them. So just use what you have and go through it all and figure out what works and figure out what doesn't work. Whatever, all these beauty products and stuff. And realizing I'm obsessed with tea tree oil.
Oh.
I have 14 different products.
Really? Do you just use it like...
It's in like various things.
Oh, I see.
So like my shampoo and conditioner and body wash will have tea tree oil in them. I have a serum, tea tree oil. I have the little dabbing stick from the body shop, tea tree oil. Deodorant, tea tree oil. Some perfumes, tea tree oil. But there's something about it. And I was thinking about it too after we had our interview with, I'm totally blanking on her name now. I feel like such an asshole. Perfume lady.
Jenny Amber.
Jenny.
You know me.
About scents that we like.
Yeah.
And tea tree oil is out there for me.
I love it.
Yeah. And light and like natural.
Like botanical, yes. But not like fruity.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I like plant scents, but I don't like florals. If it smells like a flower, I'm not interested. But anything plant, grass, herby sort, and tea tree oil is all that. And then a lot of things have, like a lot of products mix it with like eucalyptus and mint and stuff. And that's real nice.
We use that Dr. Bronner's, the big orange one is the tea tree oil. And we just dilute it. That's what we use for like body wash in the shower. Yeah. It's the best.
And I have some Trader Joe's stuff that I just, every time, I'm almost out of conditioner. I need to call somebody or go to Trader Joe's or something. They have a lot of good beauty products with tea tree oil, the Met. Trader Joe's
heads. Really?
But anyway, it's great. I love the way it smells. And it's good for your skin and it's nice and it feels good. My skin always feels good. Yeah. It's also anti-dandruff. It's like a natural anti-dandruff thing. I didn't know because I was asking around and trying to find something for dandruff that wasn't Head and Shoulders and just full of fucking chemicals and shit. And just like it foams so much because of all the weird shit that's in it. It doesn't smell great either. And then somebody said, oh, just try something with tea tree oil. And I'm like, I'm already using it.
I got a cover full of that shit.
Yeah, I got like four bottles. So I loaded up last time I went to TJ's. I'm just like, and this has been like, you know, a couple of years of accumulating all these products and stuff. And I'm always drawn to it. Like I have this, I go to like Winners, which is like TJ Maxx or Marshall's up here, and go to the natural beauty section. And it's just always just a weird shit show of stuff that you don't know what they're going to get.
Yeah,
and I just try a bunch of weird stuff. And I got this weird deodorant, and it's coriander and tea tree oil.
Oh, weird.
It's a natural deodorant. It's lovely, you guys. It's great and fresh. I'll use natural deodorant in the wintertime because a lot of the time it doesn't cut it in the summertime.
Right.
And I need to actually move to actual deodorant and antiperspirant in the summertime. But for the wintertime, it's great. It smells wonderful. It's fresh and lovely, especially after a shower, too. And in the heat of the shower. Ooh, it's nice.
Yeah, it's good. It's
good. I got some, like... Epsom salts too. Shit, yeah, it's good.
Are you one to have a bath?
Every once in a while, yes. It's not my preferred, but every once in a while I will. Put on a mask, put on a podcast, have a soak.
That is a nice 25 minutes.
I get bored though.
Yeah, I do too. That's why I need a podcast.
And the water gets cold.
Yeah. It's like I can't tan either. It's like I get bored.
I can tan. No problem.
Unless I'm asleep, which is not good. It's never ended well. I just get bored. Anyway, mask in a podcast. Every once in a while on my Instagram stories, you'll see hashtag mask in a podcast. There's some weird shit.
There's some good crime podcasts coming out too. Maybe my next obsession.
Oh shit. I'm on a break from some. I need to get after Teacher's Pet.
I need new podcasts. Pets,
and I need to. Anyway, we're getting off. You guys, way we are going way off.
And we are over time.
Yes, we are much over time.
You guys.
Just go listen to the Day at a Time theme song and feel better. Okay? That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Eat a pearl cabbage. Read a book about a person that doesn't look like you.
Come on.
And
you're welcome.
You're welcome. Okay, bye.
Our work here is done.
You guys, thank you again, always, forever, for listening. Find us in all the places. Instagram, Fashionags Podcast. Twitter, Fashionags Pod, although I'm not great on Twitter.
No.
There'll be a
recap getting signed
blog.
Out of our Twitter account.
Oh, no.
Sign back in. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. FashionagsPodcast.com. fashionhangs@gmail.com. You guys, all the things, all the places, just do it and know that
we love to hear from you.
We do love it. And we love you.
But we love fashion more.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.